בטחים גם יחד הנה מה טוב הנה מה טוב לילה 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 לילה.
Welcome to this week's message from Rabbi Kevin Solomon, Senior Rabbi of Congregation Beth Hillel in Roswell, Georgia. Beth Hillel is one of the largest Messianic Jewish synagogues in the world and provides a place where Jewish people can find the Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus in Hebrew, and retain their Jewishness. It's also where Gentiles worship and embrace the roots of the faith in drawing closer to God. Click the link in the description to support this ministry or to view our YouTube channel. Let's join Rabbi Kevin now as he shares this word from Scripture.
I'm real excited today, y'all, to share with you. He's spoken, as I've been on my leave, a few different times, and I'm so grateful to him and all of our guest speakers that we've had. They've just done such a wonderful job. We're so blessed here. And I love it. You know, honestly, I remember, you know, when Beth Hillel first started out back in 19, a long time ago, and... and my parents, you know, a lot of the traditional Jewish community didn't really want us around, and a lot of the Christian community didn't understand us. And so we were kind of between a rock and a hard place there, and very few Christian believers kind of understood what in the world are they doing? What is this Messianic Judaism thing? And now it's more readily accepted, really amongst both, but especially amongst the believing world. But yet at the same time, not a lot really fully get it, if you will. But there are those few exceptions of pastors who really understand the Messianic Jewish movement and the call on and for our people. And Pastor Matt is one of those people, and he's such a good friend. He's a brother, and I love every time we catch lunch together. We do it periodically, and I always learn so much because the guy, as you will hear and as you know, having seen him, the guy just is fantastic, and he knows a lot, and he's such a blessing. And he's the Sewell Mill campus pastor of North Metro Church, and like I said, just a very, very good friend. Back years ago, even came to Beth Hillel. Used to sit kind of like in that area over there where Rita is, and is a real blessing. So let's give a big Beth Hillel welcome home, Pastor Matt Johnston.
Shabbat shalom, mishpacha. I got some props coming up on stage here. I want to open with a story. And remember like it was yesterday. I was in first grade, so it was most assuredly not yesterday, as I am 38 years old now. And I was at the kitchen table with my mother, and she was trying, operative word, trying to help me memorize a Bible verse. And I don't know if it was for like school or church or school at church, something, I don't know. So she was trying to help me memorize a particular scripture, and this particular scripture was Psalm 23. Maybe you've heard of it. Perhaps you just sang it. And my mom was, despite my best efforts, a really, really good teacher. She helped me memorize things. She was very percussive and rhythmic. So she would say something rhythmically, and I was supposed to repeat it back. So she would say, you know, the Lord is my shepherd. And I was supposed to say, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. But then because of my ADHD brain, I would like drift off. And I will tell you now, I have the same attention span now that I did in first grade. Nothing has changed. So my mom's saying, the Lord is my shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd, shall not want. And then all of a sudden, I just start drifting off into all the things I'm worried about, my Lunchables, like, is the pizza one's going to, like, check out? Is that okay? Is that actual pizza? I'm drifting off to 8,000 things. Like, on Power Rangers, they brought in the Green Ranger. He's giving that work to the Red Ranger, just punking him. I don't like it. What? And my mom could not grab my attention, but she stuck with it. And because of that, Psalm 23 stuck with me. To this day, I can reach down, and Psalm 23 is there. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. It's still in there. It's stuck with me. I mean, you can clap for Psalm 23. Not for my memorization. It's been like 30 something years. I should have it down by now. but it's stuck with me. And in fact, it stuck with me so much so, even due to my lack of attention span and my ADHD, it stuck with me so much over the years that I took this verse into my parenting of my daughter. You see, back in 2021, February 19th of 2021, we were blessed with a beautiful baby girl. My wife gave birth. My wife and I gave birth. My wife gave birth. I was just there. My wife gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, Ruth Noel Johnston. And I know what you're thinking. She's precious. She's adorable. But don't let it fool you. Because this child, oh wait, no, don't jump too far ahead. Go back to the picture, don't jump too far ahead. Okay, well, okay. So basically, don't let it fool you because this child has been wild with sleep. Wild with sleep. So like the non-blinking stare, this is her circa 2 a.m. every night, okay? The child would not sleep. And so here's what happened. Early on in her little life, probably first couple months she was alive, it was actually what was concurrent was I was writing all this in-house curriculum that we published at the church I pastor at, and I'd be up writing to like 1:15 a.m. So I'm assiduously typing away on my computer, and I'd be like, oh no, it's 1:15. Humans need sleep. I gotta go to bed, and I would close my computer. I would go upstairs, and I would. I'm telling you, this was the exact timing. This was like a bit my daughter would do with me that I didn't appreciate nor thought was funny. I'll show you. So I'd go to lay my head on my pillow, and almost exactly at the time, at like 1:30 a.m., it would be, ah! And she would start crying in a room, and I'd be like, oh my goodness. So there's kind of like, wait out. She good. Okay, here we go. And so, I mean, I'm telling you, it was like the button that would make her cry. So in that like sleep deprived stupor, I would just down the hallway. And you know, like you have like no sense of where you are. You don't even know like what house or city you're in at that point. Like, I'm going into like the wrong room. I'm like, wait, no, she's in here. And I would go scoop her out for a little crib. And I'm holding her and she's just screaming. Ah! And as a new dad, I have no idea what to do. And so, in desperation, I had to reach down for something. When I reached down for something to do to calm and comfort my daughter, I reached down, and do you know what was there? Psalm 23. And so, holding her as a new dad, I would just, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down to green pastures, and you decide still waters. And wouldn't you know it, every so often, it would work, and she would fall asleep, right? And so then, in terror, I would feel like I was holding a grenade with a pin pulled. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't blink, don't sneeze, don't have a loud thought. She'll wake up. And I would do that trick that every parent tries to do in trying to lay her back down. You know, like, you lay her down, and you're like, I'm just going to have to stay here all night because there's no movement there. And you do that thing. It's the equivalent of like a waiter or a waitress trying to pull the tablecloth off without knocking over all the dishes. Like, she was safe. And then I would go back to my room, try to lay down. And we'd start the whole thing over, but I would time it again. And I actually have a picture. Hopefully we haven't shown it yet. Yeah. So I would go in, and sometimes I would try to make the best of it. But look, this child was meant. Zoom in one more time for chaos. One more time. Zoom it in. Bam. She would be meant for chaos. I guess not. Okay. She'd be meant for chaos. And we would go time and again. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. I would, in the deep dark of her room, time and again, the deep dark, I would hold her close and I would rub her little head and I would say Psalm 23 over her, and it would bring her, hear it, comfort. Well, year and a half go by and she actually starts to kind of get in a little bit of rhythm of sleep. We move houses and as she's about a year and a half, we decide we're going to move her upstairs in her big girl bed, okay? She's, oh my gosh. You can go to the next picture. It's okay. This child's made for chaos. So we decided we're going to put her in her big girl bed. And so we would do that. We're like, hey, you can do it. You can do it, Ruth. You can do it. You're good. All right. And so my wife and I would be downstairs watching TV, catching up, just regaling each other with our day. And all of a sudden, we'd hear, upstairs. And we're trying to. And then it got personal. She would, like, she was calling me to, like, a duel and, like, slapping me in the face with the glove. She'd be like, Dada! She had my name in her mouth. She was calling me out by name. Dada! And her tone and, like, undergirding message was like, get up here! And my wife, my wife would never go up, just as a public service announcement. Many of you moms probably know, when a child cannot sleep and is crying, mom is the worst person to go up there because they're way more clingy with mom. So with my daughter, Ruth, when she sees my wife and she's upset, it's like a fast and furious nitrous oxide boost of crying. She's just like, aah! Like she has to be with, she'll just like the movie Alien, just clinging on to my wife. So I go up. And so I'm downstairs at the new house. She's like 2 and a half. And then she's, Dada, you get up here. And my wife always says the same thing. She always would look at me and go, your boss is calling you. And so I'd go upstairs. It had been like a year and a half. And so I'm trying to like, hey, Ruth, okay, the closet light's good. The night light's good. Is there any baby scaring you? Okay. And she's still crying. Oh, I'm so scared. No. And I went, oh yeah. I reached down and there was Psalm 23. I forgot that I used to speak that over her. And so in the deep dark of her room, I would hold her by her bed, as she was in her bed, by her bedside. And I would rub her little head. Now it's saying, I would recite Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And it would bring her comfort. Well, sleep was never consistent. Success was never consistent. So she'd go for 3 months good, 3 months bad, 3 months good, 3 months bad, whatever. So fast forward probably 6 months after that, maybe a little bit more. She's upstairs sleeping in her room. And one particular night, I hear my boss calling me, Dada! It's like the work whistle. You know what I'm saying? Dada! And like a sailor to a siren song, as I hear her banshee shriek, I up the stairs, I go in the room, and she's just freaked out this night. And I'm afraid. I'm scared. I don't know. I'm like, what's scaring you? She's like, I don't know. I was like, what do you want me to do? And I was kind of panicky. And I was like, well, what do we, I don't know what to do. How do I help? And she goes, do the God thing. And I go, what do you mean the God thing? She goes, do the God thing. And I'm like, what do you mean the God thing? She goes, the shepherd thing. And I was like, oh, the Lord is my shepherd. And so in the deep dark of her room, by her bedside, I would hold her close. And I would rub her little head. And I would recite Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Pay attention to that lie down part. He leads me beside still waters. Pay attention to that still waters part. And this would bring her comfort. What's really cool now is she's like 4 and a half now. And now it is part of our routine every single night to hold hands, like, come on, shorty, we'll go up the stairs together or hold her. And I lay her in bed every night and we work on Psalm 23 together. And I wanted to record it for the purposes of the sermon. And by way of disclaimer, I don't want church or congregation to be performative for Ruth. So I told her we were making this video for Mama, so she'll address Mama in it. But this is Ruth saying it now.
He needs me besides
still waters.
He restores
my soul.
He leads me
in the path of God's
name. My sister was going to say, yeah. Even though I walk
for the valley of the shadow of death, I feel no evil. for you always.
Thanks. Your
wife
and your
staff and comfort me.
You
prepared paper before me who's on my own.
You
want my head for the comfort of.
The cup runs over. I like it. Surely.
Goodness and mercy for all the days of my life.
And I will dwell. And then.
Forever.
Where you'll dwell where?
The Lord forever.
You'll dwell in the Lord forever? Well, yeah. But like the house of the Lord forever.
Oh, the house of the Lord.
How long?
Five years?
Yeah, but long enough. Forever.
What? That's like
14
years.
Forever?
You went up.
Forever is
14
years.
Love you, boss.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, forever is 14 years, in case you guys are unsure. Also notice, she talks with her hands a lot. I don't know where she gets that from. I also love her choreographed dance sequences with like that. She's just getting after it. But we make this part of our routine. And in fact, so much so, this is of perpetual comfort to her that even 2 weeks ago, she was having a really bad night with fear and I had gotten home late, so we didn't get to do our routine. So I'm downstairs and of course I hear, Dada, Dada. So I'm like, I got it. My boss is calling. Got to get up there. And now it's like a thing where like, we like know and we'll like dap each other up. I'm like, all right, let's do it. She's like, let's do it. I'm like, let's do it. And so now I'll like, you know, I hype man her. I'll be like, the Lord is mine. She'll be like, shepherd, I shall not want. Makes me, like a hype man in a hip hop song. I'm like, I get money. Ha ha. Like we go back and forth and she has it down and it is still of great comfort to her. And so as we get into Psalm 23 today, it's important to note that Psalm 23 is a psalm of comfort. There's various genres, myriad genres of psalms. This is a psalm of comfort, and that is what I want all of us to experience today. I want each and every single one of you to experience the comfort of the Lord as we get into this psalm. And just so you know, I've already said the whole psalm, but as we go through it, I kind of want to go point by point and like a shepherd kind of lead us through this beautiful, timeless work of art, this timeless truth of scripture, Psalm 23. But I'm not going to hit necessarily every verse in analysis or every single section. I want to kind of tease out and elucidate the shepherd sheep pastoral motif in imagery as we go along. And speaking of the imagery, here's kind of what I want as kind of a framework for today. A couple weeks ago, my family and I went with some family friends to Disney and we went to Epcot and we rode this amazing ride called Soarin'. It's like, it's the word soaring, but it's soaring. So if you can go back one picture. So who here has ever been on the ride Soarin'? Just show of hands. Okay, hot take. It's a top three ride. Top three ride. And if you've never been on Soarin', what happens is you sit in a chair and there's this giant blue screen, green screen in front of you that kind of wraps around you. Then they lift you up, your chair lifts up and you're sitting there dangling your feet. Don't worry, you have a seatbelt. But you're dangling your feet and all 6'3" of me is like a kid on the swing set just kicking your feet. And they lift you up. And they lean you forward and you see the screen envelop you. It surrounds you. You can go to that next picture. And what you see is all these beautiful landscapes as you soar around the world. You see the Golden Gate Bridge. Man, you go to the Swiss Alps. You see the African savanna. You go all over the place. And as you do so, again, you're immersed in this imagery, in this environment. And in fact, when you start like going faster over the mountains, they spray air, like wind and air at you. When you're in India, you're flying over India, they diffuse the scent of jasmine in the air and you can smell it. Even there's this one part where a whale jumps out of the water and splashes and there's like a little like splash of water. It's really cool. It's really immersive. And so what I want today to be, as this psalm is rife with this enveloping, visceral, arresting imagery, I want us to experience it like we're on Soarin'. I want the Ruach HaKodesh to kind of lift us up and pull us into the text and surround us with this imagery. And hopefully it has this profound impact on us. And in fact, I didn't share this last night, but when I went there with my friend, friends. He's a believer. And I looked over at the end of the ride and he was crying. And I was like, you good, cuz? Like, are you, was it scary? And he's like, that was just beautiful. And so I want you to have that same experience today as we get into Psalm 23. And so as we're on the soaring ride, let's get into it. Are you guys ready to take the ride that is Psalm 23? Y'all ready? Let's get it. Okay. First image we see, first thing we're introduced to in the passage, Psalm 23:1, a psalm of David, of Melech David. We'll talk about that word psalm at the very, very, very end. It's actually mizmor, which means song. So a song of Melech David. Adonai is my shepherd. I shall not want. Literally, I shall not or will not have need. Adonai is my shepherd. So on our soaring ride, we're sitting in, lifting up, leaning forward. We're enveloped in this imagery of a shepherd. That's the first thing we picture. Now, I want to tell you a couple things about a shepherd. Some of it's going to be obvious. Some of it might not be so much so, but it will factor in as we go. Now, a shepherd is, surprise, surprise, someone who is leading around sheep through many different and diverse landscapes with a rod and a staff. The rod for protection and the staff for helping lift up the sheep if they fall. Okay, so this is what a shepherd does. So you're probably like, that's obvious. But one thing I want you to keep in mind, contextually, geographically contextually, is this. I was blessed a few years ago to go to Haaretz, to go to Israel. And one of the things, I talked to Rabbi Kevin about this, one of the things I was embarrassed by is growing up in a church context where I went to Sunday school, all the pictures were just desert. It's like Yeshua's in the desert. So-and-so's in the desert. It's just desert. If you're in Israel, you're in the desert. And sometimes, you know, it'd be spruced up with rocks and stuff, but mostly just desert. One of the things I found bemusing and befuddlingly beautiful is that Israel is a beautiful place with a rich diversity of landscapes. I mean, there's like these fields, these wheat fields where the wheat just back and forth, almost like they're like singing how great is our God, poetically just moving back and forth, almost looking like the Great Plains here in the States. But then we drive by somewhere else and there's these beautiful, lush, green rolling hills and pastures. And those would go up into kind of green mountains. And then sometimes those would give way to more rocky brown mountains. And then there would be like these deep valleys between mountains. And there'd be these like rocky, tough terrain, kind of sometimes even narrow roads that are rocky and full of crags and crevices. But then there's also like lots of bodies of water in Israel. And so sometimes there's like muddy parts, more wetland type feel. And then there are stretches of desert and kind of barren wilderness. It's a rich topography. There's a diversity of landscape. But a shepherd in these days would hear it, lead the sheep through each and every single type of environment, through the entirety of topography, this rich, diverse landscape of the land. Now, as you're like, yeah, I know, a shepherd leads sheep. Woo, breakthrough stuff, Matt. Here's the deal, though. Oftentimes, the shepherd's sheep were not necessarily his. They were either the families or the villages, which those two things usually overlap, the family and the village. They're the sheep of the family or the village, or the sheep of a far more wealthy person that he would tend to and care for. Now, because of this, in the history of scholarship, they've usually surmised that shepherding was a lowly role. It was not prestigious. It didn't have like a 401k. Like, it wasn't probably paying six figures, right? It was more lowly. However, more recent scholarship has attested to and pointed to the fact that since this is written by Melech David, King David, and it's a psalm that's supposed to elucidate or personify some of the character and nature of the Lord, since it's from David, we could probably surmise that this was political language. You see, shepherd in the ancient Near East and the surrounding cultures, shepherd actually had a political connotation of a king. As a king would often lead people through various stages of a nation's life and would protect them with the rod and help them and hope lift them up with the staff. So in this, I want us to kind of see and hold both. In this beautiful, timeless psalm, the Lord is portrayed as a loving, kind, caring shepherd of sheep, but also a king who protects, lifts up, and leads. So hold that together. A shepherd that cares for, loves, and the rest, and a king that looks out for and leads and protects and lifts up. So really, Psalm 23 is about the good shepherd king, the good shepherd king. And we want to keep that in our minds. Now, we've talked about the shepherd. Let's talk about sheep. Sheep are hilarious. All right, so sheep, three things you need to know about the little sheep that the shepherd tended to. One, sheep were, like me in high school, not smart. Sheep, like me before smartphone, often were lost. And three, sheep, like me working with power tools, were not safe, okay? So let's get to the first one. Sheep are not smart. Sheep can literally do nothing on their own. And when I say that, there's been a lot of like people have written books on this. Like a lot of people like raise sheep, tend sheep, and they're like, yeah, they can literally do nothing. Not only will sheep foolishly fall into trouble, but they will actually jump full speed, full sprint into trouble. And we have a video here to demonstrate what I'm talking about. Oh, wait, hold on. We'll circle back to this. Let's go to the video first real quick. This is what sheep will often do. It's coming. Here we go. Oh, look, he's out. Okay. Whee! I talked to someone who spent some time at a sheep farm, and they told me that the sheep farm, apparently I'm going to sing for you guys, and they told me that a sheep farmer told them that when it's raining, the sheep just, and they have to go around, and they have to tilt the sheep's head down, otherwise the sheep will drown. Saving lives. Now, I want you to get a visual of the sheep. I was going through several pictures of sheep. Here's one of them. That one scares me because these sheep, I would not want to meet these sheep in a back alley, okay? They're going to beat me up and take my stuff. So the other picture of sheep I came across made me realize I'm a little bit afraid of sheep. I'm a little bit scared. Look at the eyes of this guy. Then next one I was going to use actually just made me laugh because they all look the same. And someone told me, prepping for the sermon, they're like, well, you know, they cloned a sheep, right? Which I was like, I don't believe that because all sheep look cloned, okay? They all look the same. So I settled on this. That's more setting. That's more befitting the setting. But these, I want you to picture these sheep. They're helpless. They're kind of hapless. And the shepherd leads them. And not only, well, we'll get to that. But the shepherd has to lead them and do everything for them because they're not smart. They lack direction and they're not safe. And that's kind of the last thing I want to talk to you about. So sheep were a just walking woolly target. They were helpless and they were often pursued by any number of predators. Call it wolves, foxes, or bears. They were, and these predators, I'm going to give you the Hebrew word for it, and it's going to come back around at the end. Predators would often radaf, is the Hebrew word, radaf, chase after, pursue, hunt these sheep. All types of predators would do this. They would radaf, they would run, pursue, and hunt these sheep. And so the shepherd had to protect them with the rod, and the staff, if they fell down, pick them back up. So the sheep were hapless, helpless, and because these predators would radaf or pursue after them. So now we've got kind of like who we're talking about. Let's talk about where we're talking about and the next stop on our soaring ride as we see, oh, the shepherd, oh, we see the sheep in the field. Now we zoom in to the pasture. Let me read this in verse 2. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Let's talk about green pastures. So again, on our soaring ride, we're going to see the enveloping image of a pasture. Okay, hold here for a second. So, So we see this picture of a pasture. And one of the things I want you to realize is like, yes, we look at this and like some of us are like, oh, that's just beautiful to look at. Some of you DIY people and lawn manicurists see it and you hear that like Home Depot music, like goon, 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 goon. And you're like, ooh, I'm gonna get my lawnmower. I'll mow that. I'll pull them weeds. I'll put some in there. I'll put some ficus there. Like you're already thinking about what you can do to it. But when a sheep would see a pasture, they wouldn't just think, oh, aesthetics. They, like someone eyeing an all-you-can-eat buffet, would just see food. And so like probably the analogy for us as people would be if we walked up to a pasture and just saw a sea of Chick-fil-A sprawl before us. That's what it'll be like for all you guys, okay? Like, just Chick-fil-A, you're like, ooh, chicken sandwich, chicken nuggets, waffle fries, lemonade. Like, it's just a sprawling field of that. Which, by the way, I have to address this. Where I grew up, there was one Chick-fil-A and you had to drive 20 minutes. Y'all got one Chick-fil-A on, someone's holding up a cup right now. You have one Chick-fil-A on every street corner of existence in Atlanta. Y'all blessed with it. So we can go back to the normal picture of the field. But a sheep, man, they would view the pasture like some like debauched buffet where they're just like putting on a bib with no shame. But this was sustenance and this was food. Now, so not only are they excited for the pasture, but notice this language of he makes me lie down. You'll see in the verse. He makes me lie down. Now, I don't know what you picture here, but I always pictured kind of this like forceful laying down of the sheep. Like if you've ever seen someone trying to train their dog to go to the bathroom outside, they kind of push their backside down, right? And like, come on, make snowflake, make. I always pictured like that. Well, really, in Hebrew, the verb here, ravetz, it actually is a very specific and precise word used for shepherding. And actually very precisely and specifically connotes to a shepherd laying a sheep down gently on all fours. And what's really cool about the original Hebrew poetry here is this actually has, the way that the verb is formed, it has one, two, three, four syllables. It's as if you can hear each limb of the sheep lay down softly. And speaking of softly, remember the diverse landscape and topography we talked about? And these green pastures, this was soft soil. This was soft ground. This is where you want to lay down. So picture like this high grass here. This is where the sheep is resting and finding comfort. And so we need to see, feel, and experience this as we're on this soaring ride through the text. And we should like kind of like start to feel that rich green pasture. But then we also kind of as the next stop on our soaring ride, we kind of zoom past the pasture and we see quiet waters. And we have a picture of quiet waters here. And what I love about quiet waters, still waters, depending on the translation, in the TLV, it's still waters. But in the original Hebrew, it can mean calm waters, quiet waters, or even, hear it, restful waters. So we have this image of this soft resting sheep and then this these restful waters. They're not stirred up, they're tranquil. And one commentary I read said, it's as if the affect, emotion, and constitution of the psalmist David is reflecting, he sees his reflection in the still waters, the restful waters. Not only does he see himself, like his reflection, but he sees his restful constitution in demeanor and countenance reflected in these calm waters. And there's something soothing about this. Matter of fact, I always say that science is trying to catch up to the scriptures. And they have done neurobiological studies. As we're immersing ourselves in this world and this nature imagery, they have done neurobiological studies that indicate that spending time outside in nature, especially if you're like barefoot on the ground, kind of grounding, spending outside time outside in nature is not only just healthy for you, it's literally neurologically soothing and centering. Like your vagus nerve, which is part of your central circuitry that innervates kind of the rest of your body, it actually like improves the tonality of that nerve. It helps, it's good for your cardiovascular health. It's good for your mental health. Being outside to have this feeling of rest. So one thing as a takeaway from here is I would encourage you guys, go read Psalm 23. Go listen to Psalm 23 in nature and let it kind of just like almost like seep into your skin, right? Like let it balance your nervous system as you see these restful, these soft pastures and these restful waters. But let's look at the perspective of the sheep, or consider the perspective of the sheep again. When we see a body of water, so if you're out walking and you see this water, I don't think any of y'all are going to take your canteen and fill it up with that water, that green sludge water, right? That algae water. Because most of you don't see that water and think, I should drink that. I'd love to be on the toilet for 3 weeks. That sounds great. No, you got summer to summer, okay? You got plans. You can't do that. But when a sheep would see water like this, they're like, you trying to give me some of that water? I'm thirsty. When you trying to give me some of that? And it would be nourishing to them. So the pasture would be food to them. And this still waters would be nourishment and drink to them. And this is where the shepherd would lead them. And hear this, a shepherd would always lead the sheep from pasture to pasture, from waters to waters. And it was a good thing the shepherd did this too, because remember how I said sheep weren't smart? If sheep consumed all the resources and they ate all the grass of the field, they would literally just be like, Mom, it's gone. We're probably just going to die here. And they would not know where to go. And so the shepherd had to lead them from pasture to pasture, from waters to waters. And so we have this beautiful imagery of a pasture and of restful waters. And then we read a timeless line. Let this stick with you. I just want to read the first part of verse 3. He restores my soul. So again, we're just going to stick with this, the shepherd sheep pastoral imagery. This phrase in the original Hebrew could not be more beautiful. Literally, it reads, my life, he returns to me. My life, he returns to me. And as we have countenanced and considered the shepherd sheep dynamic, what do we know about the shepherd? The shepherd guides, finds, protects, provides food and water and rest. The shepherd is the good shepherd king who leads the sheep and loves the sheep and provides everything they need. If it wasn't for the shepherd, they would have no life. The shepherd time and again returns the life and preserves the life of the sheep. And so in this good shepherd king, leading the sheep by the pasture and by alongside the waters, I want that to kind of maybe frame or reframe our view of the Lord as the good shepherd king. Because here, unfortunately, is what I experience too often in pastoral ministry. I talk to people about their view of the Lord, and through them sharing and just like their constitution, what they're saying, their tone, they kind of paint the Lord, like I hear these like kind of like wild ideas about the Lord. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to close your eyes and try to try to lock in the first thing that comes to your mind, okay? So close your eyes. I'm going to ask you a question. Who or what do you picture when you think about the Lord? Okay? Like picture something in your head, okay? What do you picture? What do you picture? What do you picture? Okay, you can open your eyes. Here's what I hear too often. I hear people describe the Lord as some, I don't know why it's this way, some old guy, don't show the picture yet, I'll tell you when. So like an older guy with like white hair and a white beard, and he's jacked, like CrossFit jacked, and he's got lightning bolt in one hand and like a fireball in the other, and he's just like, he just wants to judge people. He's just waiting for people to mess up. He just wishes you would. He's vindictive and vengeful and angry, and he just wants to, with lightning and with fireball. And every time I hear that, I'm like, that's not the Lord of the Bible. That's Zeus, homie. That is Zeus from Greek mythology. That is not what the Lord is like. That does not sound like a good shepherd king. Likewise, I talk to people often who have this view of the Lord that I feel like they make the Lord seem like an angry, standoffish, hard to please father. Like a father who's like, what are you doing? I guess that's what I do. Like kind of disinterested. Or the father where like if a little kid made something and ran up, was like, Dad, I made this. The dad would be like, yeah, I can tell. Jeez. Or if the kid came up and was like, Dad, I got a B in American history. He'd be like, how'd you get a B in American history? You live in America, get an A. And he'd be like, okay. Like just hard to please, kind of mean. Or a little bit harsh, like, stop doing this. Do this more. Why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like your sister? Not in my house. Very strict and rigid. I hear this all the time. I just hear this all the time. I thirdly hear people describe the Lord almost like a far off distant energy, like the universe in New Age, or like a Brahman in Hindu, or like the Force in Star Wars. Just he's out there, it's out there, and just kind of some like distant energy, uninvolved in our lives. That is not a picture of the good shepherd king that we are presented here in Psalm 23, one of the most memorable and timeless, beautiful psalms of all time. That's giving us a window into the character and nature of the Lord. The Lord is a good shepherd king. He's not angry Zeus. He's not standoffish father. He's not immaterial energy somewhere far off in the galaxy. No, a good shepherd king. And I am so sorry if in your life you have felt anything other than that, or if you had any picture or perception of the Lord that was not good shepherd king, because that's what we're given. And so hopefully we can dispel and dissuade those notions and those categories you've had, and you come to know, feel, and experience ongoing the love of the good shepherd king. But let me ask you a second question. When you think about the Lord or your walk with the Lord, do you feel anxious and stress, or comfort and rest? anxious and stressed, or comfort and rest. Again, in pastoral ministry, I hear all the time a panic when people talk about their faith. I know I should be doing more. I gotta do more. Gotta do better. Gotta say, and like, I know God's probably really upset with me, and I didn't do my morning devotion this morning. So, I mean, he's definitely, I don't know, my salvation is probably in question now. And I'm just like, whoa, you gotta chill. Or I have talked to 3 people probably to quantify lately who told me they grew up in a very strict religious upbringing that honestly, everything was like, you have to do this. Stop doing this. Like, why are you only volunteering 2 things at church? You should volunteer 4 things. Why are you only doing this at congregation? You should do way, 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 way more. Stop doing this. If you live in my house, you can't do this. Oh, you're not my son or my daughter anymore. Everything is very hard and heavy. And here's what I've discerned from people. Some of the things they have been told to do growing up, like read your Bible and, you know, read the scriptures and follow Yeshua. Those are all really good things. Fantastic things. That's what we're supposed to do. But the energy behind it and the intention behind it and the delivery behind it and the expectation behind it gets weighty. And so people feel anxious and stressed rather than comfort and rest. And if that has been your experience at any point in your life, again, I want to dissuade those notions and dispel those notions so you can know, feel, and ongoingly experience the Lord as the good shepherd king who literally returns your life to you, who loves and cares for you, but also leads you and is leading the world into life eternal and the restoration of all things. And as we consider and we try to lock in this imagery of good shepherd king, the text pivots here though. So everything's like really positive, beautiful. And the text pivots here, you'll see. And we read this in verse 4. Even though I walk, even though is a transitional phrase. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and staff, they comfort me. And so kind of unfortunately, though there's beauty in it, the next stop on our Soren ride is the ride swoops down into a valley. And in terms of this rich landscape, this looks almost like cut paste, exactly like a scene I saw when we were driving to Qumran, actually, when we were in Yisrael. And these rolling hills actually keep rolling and they keep hilling. And a lot of times they'll like grow up into mountains. And what you'll see in the next picture is these mountains reach up. And when night falls, they create this little bowl, right? That creates a valley. And if there are mountains that reach up and there's tree coverage and there's cloud coverage at night, notice down like the bottom of the screen, at night it gets pitch black dark. Like as in can't see your hand in front of your face dark. And we are to feel and experience on this immersive enveloping ride, we're to feel the anxiety and terror of that. Think about a shepherd who's by himself out in the wilderness. Think about a sheep who again is like a tiny little woolly moving target for predators. Every rustle of the grass or like creak of a tree, you're thinking, uh-oh, looking over your shoulder. And if you notice in the text, it says the valley of the shadow of death. This is a precise, specific word in Hebrew. And it's actually used in a couple different places. The prophets use this word all the time. It's tzal mevet. And tzal mevet in Hebrew means, hear it, deep shadow, deepest darkness, and darkest grief. Deep shadow, deepest darkness, and darkest grief. This is what the shepherd is experiencing in the valley. This is, it's as if like night enshrouds us, night envelops us, and we're in this place. And unfortunately, in some regards, this is just a place we're all going to find ourselves. Because look at the verse again. It says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The word walk here is an imperfect verb. A lot of you probably know this, some of you may not be aware, but in Hebrew, there are 2 main types of verbs. There's perfect and imperfect. A perfect verb means already done. It's finished, it's complete, already happened. So the psalmist doesn't say, I walked through the valley of the shadow of death. He uses an imperfect, I will walk or will walk ongoing. It's action that will continue, that will be present or continue into the future. So if I was literally translating this and no one had ever shown me the English translation, I would say, I will walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And so what we see here and what we experience here is the inevitability of the valley. The valley seasons will happen. They irrevocably will. And what I tell people is, it's okay to be in a valley season. It's okay to not be okay. And in those seasons of valley, here's what I've learned. Suffering is subjective. You talk to someone who's having a relational conflict or strife with a friend or loved one, there's deep hurt with that. Someone who maybe just didn't get the promotion they wanted at a job that's already real good, probably making way more money than the rest of us. Well, you don't dismiss that because there's hurt there. There's probably feelings of betrayal and injustice and inequity and you know, feeling like you're, like dismissal. Like there's real emotions attached to that. You know, you talk to someone who, and then it's like there's some like notched up, like more intense, perhaps life circumstances where, man, maybe someone is like really struggling financially and they don't know how they're going to like pay their bills. Man, someone lost a loved one. Maybe someone was on like the receiving end of just intense hatred and all the hurt that goes with that. Man, maybe someone just got diagnosed with an illness and they're like, I mean, I know it's, I think that's going to be okay, but I have to walk this road now. I have to be in this valley now. Or maybe it is something like, hey, I have an illness and the prognosis is not good. It's probably not going to end up well. Or maybe you're actively walking through a season or walking with someone through a season where they are actively on the precipice of death, the valley of the shadow of death. But to each part, each experience in the valley, suffering is subjective. Again, so what I want to affirm is like your hurt, the feelings that are around all of these things are real. And it's okay to experience those. And the Good Shepherd sees those and is familiar with those. Yes, there is wisdom in I'm having relational conflict. I feel hurt, wounded, betrayed, but I am not actively dying. There is a wisdom and a perspective to that, but you are allowed both. And pastorally and biblically, you should experience both. So in this valley season, though, in this valley time, how does the psalmist respond? How does Melech David respond? Is he terrified? Is he overwhelmed? Is he at death's door? Plot twist. Look at what Melech David says. He says, I will fear no evil. Wait, how? He says, because you are with me. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Here, I want to show you this real quick, if you can go to that next slide. So throughout the psalm so far, we've seen the pronoun he, you sound like an elf laughing. He, and in the valley, at this one specific part of the verse, it turns and it goes from he to you. He to you. And there is a closeness and intimacy with the Good Shepherd King in the valley that perhaps wasn't there in the pasture. The sheep knew and was familiar with the Good Shepherd in the pasture, but they're all sprawled out. And the valley, now it, no longer he, you. And what I have found in valley seasons, please hear this, is there is a unique nearness in the valley. No longer he, you. And there is a comfort in this closeness, I this could be longer. I'll make a long story short, which I'm not great at, but I'll make a long story short. I've lived with illness for 15, coming up in June next month, on 16 years of illness. It's an autoimmune illness. It's neurological. It's a bunch of other things. Some stuff has gotten way better. Some stuff's gotten worse. And some stuff like new problems, and then try to address them one by one. And net, it's just, it's difficult. It's discouraging. It's painful at times. It's frustrating and it's very uncertain. I don't know how it's going to go. And living with that, I had this experience lately, especially over the last year and a half, of just like a lot of deep valley seasons with health and a bunch of other stuff. And a couple of months ago, I was at this conference with some people I work with at my church. And at this conference, this band was singing a song called Good Plans. And in the song, the chorus just sings, he has good plans. He has good plans for me. If I know my father has good plans. And the rest of the song recites Psalm 23. Well, I'm nudging my buddies as the song goes on, because I'm like, hey, I love this song. Like, he has good plans. And all of a sudden, I start feeling this welling of emotion inside of me. And like, I just got to be honest. I got to be real. I am an ugly crier. Like when I start to cry like a neutron star, my face concaves into a black hole and I just, and I'm like, oh, don't look at me. And as I heard this song and it washed over me, I started melting in a puddle of my own tears like the Wicked Witch of the West, just weeping and telling my buddies, like, don't look at me. And I was trying to figure out, was I moved by the beauty of the song? Perhaps, but what I was, When I was emotionally honest with myself, I realized it's because the good plans and the blessing of the Good Shepherd, I did not feel that was consistent with my subjective personal experience. And it made me weep. And it was what I felt in the valley. But what I feel in the valley or those valley moments, it is not subsumed by what I know, or it is subsumed by what I know. What I feel in the valley is okay, but what I know from the pasture of the Good Shepherd is what helps lead me through in those times. And I can tell you without fail, when I'm in those valley seasons or moments, yeah, the stuff I know about He, the Good Shepherd, it creates this closeness of you. And I always feel the Lord's nearness in those moments. There is a unique nearness in the valley, and there's comfort in closeness. But lastly, and I mean, I want you to feel that comfort today. Lastly, I have found that there is a conforming that takes place in the valley. You know, like from when you live in close quarters with someone, you either A, they drive you crazy and you can't live together anymore, or B, you kind of become more like them. And I have found over the course of our 9 years of marriage, it is comical to me how much my wife and I become like each other. And so there is something too, like you always hear, like when people are like in the bunker together or go to war together, like, man, it bonds you in a way and you kind of become like one another. And I've seen that we in those moments of closeness and comfort, man, there's a conforming that takes place. Hopefully we start looking more like the Good Shepherd King, his kindness, his mercy, his love. And you know, I always tell people in these valley seasons, man, there's some biblical imagery around like iron on an anvil, just ting, ting, just stuff getting worked out and strengthened. Like gold and fire being refined, like muscle being broken down and then rebuilt to be stronger, like the cramps and the exhaustion and the sweat you experience when you're running in order to build perseverance. So not only is there this comfort in the valley, man, there is a conforming that takes place that will lead us on the other side of the valley. And what we know about the Good Shepherd helps us in our feelings in the valley so we may experience and become more like the Good Shepherd King moving forward. Because please hear this morning, let this encourage you. The valley geographically and topographically has a beginning and an end. There is an end to the valley. Israel is not one giant valley. There is an end to the valley. And so let's see where the psalmist takes us, where Malik David takes us to bring everything home and where he points moving forward. We're going to skip down to verse 6. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of Adonai forever. And so as we're on this soaring ride through these rich landscapes, the next thing we see is another green rolling valley, like you'll see on the screen. And I want to point something else about this next pasture, because remember, the shepherd leads the sheep from pasture to pasture. And so there's another green, lush, rolling pasture moving forward, because there's another side of the valley. But notice, this picture pulls your eye up and to the right. It creates what you call a vanishing point. So it is intended to draw your eyes forward and up, which is what the end of this psalm does. And what I want the end of the sermon to do is pull your eyes forward and up as we move forward, faithfully following the Good Shepherd King with mercy, goodness and mercy at our back as we do so. And I actually want to talk about this word mercy, okay? The word mercy in Hebrew, this is significant. The word mercy is actually the word chesed. You'll see it on the screen here, is the word chesed. And chesed, this could be 10 minutes. I'm going to make it 45 seconds. Chesed, famous last words. Chesed is the number one word used to describe the Lord throughout the scriptures. I'm talking about the Tanakh and Brit Hadashah, the most consistent, both in Hebrew and corollary terms in Greek, in the Brit Hadashah. This is the number one word used to describe the central character and nature of the Lord. And in fact, in Exodus 34:6, Moshe is essentially asking the Lord, who are you? What do you like? What do you like? You tell us, what are you like? And it says that the Lord passed before Moses and said, Adonai, the faithful and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding loving and chesed, steadfast love or loving kindness. This might surprise the Lord is Zeus people, or the Lord is an angry, impatient father people, or the Lord is an amorphous energy out in the world. No, chesed is not some idea or notion. It's tied to the personhood and character and nature of the Lord. And in fact, anytime you see loving kindness or steadfast love throughout the rest of the entirety of Scripture, it is more than likely the word chesed, and you can click it like a hyperlink, and it will jump you to or call you back to Exodus 34:6 and the Lord's articulation of essential character and nature of chesed, of steadfast, faithful love. This is what the Lord is like. And notice, it says that the goodness and chesed of the Lord will follow all the days of the psalmist's life. The word follow there, I want to show this to you in Hebrew, and you'll see it come full circle. It is the verb radaf. It means to chase down or pursue. And remember, the sheep were chased down. They were radoffed by all types of various predators. Here, there's a plot twist, ironic reversal intentionally on David's part, where he's saying, no, instead of predators, actually, for those who are faithfully following the Lord, it's the Lord's chesed that is chasing us down and pursuing us all the days of our lives, looking to envelop us and protect us with the rod and lift us up with the staff. That is the character and nature of the Lord. And in this radaf, we see, and throughout the scriptures, we see that the Lord has a passionate pursuit of people. And we see this most in Yeshua. In Yeshua, we read that the Lord took on flesh and made his dwelling among us. In Colossians, we read that in Yeshua, the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. We see that the Lord's passionate pursuit of people in Yeshua, in the incarnation of Yeshua. We see in the ministry and life of Yeshua, literally the chesed of the Lord embodied and portrayed and displayed for all of the world, for all time and eternity. And in fact, on a hill, on another type of topography, on a hill, Yeshua even took on the penalty of sin and shame and death on the cross. And in fact, Yeshua leading up to this event, you know how he described himself? Yeshua says in John 10, I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. So on the cross, because we, like sheep, as it says in Isaiah 53, have gone astray, Yeshua, as the good shepherd, demonstrates and embodies the chesed of the Lord in putting us back in right relationship with the good shepherd so that we may faithfully follow. On the other side of the crucifixion, we can see the sacrifice of Yeshua. We can see, be moved by turn and repentance and honestly being overwhelmingly moved to then, like sheep following the good shepherd, now on the other side of the resurrection, follow Yeshua as our good shepherd into a life of fullness of joy and life eternal and the restoration of the Lord's good creation. That is all because of Yeshua. And in fact, I want you today, if you are a follower of Yeshua already, what I want to unfetter you from today is, man, I want to unfetter you from shame and guilt and feelings of inadequacy or fatigue and exhaustion, perhaps feelings of hopelessness or feelings of overwhelming fear, knowing that Yeshua is the good shepherd who cares for us, but also the King who is above all kings and all things. May you be comforted and encouraged by that. But if you're not a faithful follower of Yeshua, as we end today, do you know how Yeshua talks about you? Not as, oh, people don't follow me. The wicked, awful. Mm. Yeshua describes people who are not followers or believers as sheep in Luke 15. In fact, Yeshua tells a parable of a lost sheep. And in this parable, there is a shepherd who has 100 sheep, one is lost. And so he has 99 sheep, one is lost. And the bad shepherd says, I got 99 sheep, a lost sheep ain't one. Okay, 99 problems, a lost sheep ain't one. But a good shepherd says, I'm going to radoff after that one lost sheep. I'm going to chase down, pursue, and in my chesed as a good shepherd, I'm going to chase down and hunt down that lost sheep so that I can scoop it up in my loving, caring arms and return it to the family and to the fold. And so if you're not a faithful follower of Yeshua or someone in your life isn't, our hopes and our prayers collectively is that people, if they feel lost as in estranged from Yeshua, hey, that they would return, but also know that they are not lost in relation to the purview and the care of the good shepherd. And I hope if you're not a follower of Yeshua, you suddenly start to hear the swift footsteps of the good shepherd running up to embrace you and welcome you back into the fold and back into the family and walking in newness of life. And so to end today, may you, Congregation Beth Hillel, sing and memorize and all the more internalize Psalm 23 so that when you reach down for it in moments of despair and valley seasons, it's there. And may it, like it has for me, stay with you, and may you stay with it. And may you realize that the good shepherd king, man, he finds us, he guides us, he protects us, he provides food and water and sustenance for what we need. He literally returns our life to us, and he gives us rest and comfort. And so in your valley seasons, in your darkest moments, in your deep darkness, may you know that the Lord is holding you like I hold Ruth. The Lord is holding and comforting as I hold and comfort my daughter. And may you hear the cry, may you hear the beauty and see the beauty of Psalm 23 wrap around you, and may it bring you comfort. And may you know that there is not a hair on your head that is uncounted. There is not a single tear you have cried that is unseen. And there is not a single prayer you have prayed that is unheard. In your deep darkness, the Lord is holding you, speaking the Psalms of 20, the words of Psalm 23 over you as the good shepherd. And may that bring you comfort, both in pastures green and valleys deep. Shabbat shalom, mishpacha.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Rabbi Kevin. Please like, subscribe, and share this link with a friend. We would be grateful to receive your tax-deductible gift to further the good news of Messiah Yeshua. To make a contribution, please click on the PayPal link in the description. Also, to view our regular services, click the link in the description for our YouTube channel. If you would like more information about Yeshua the Messiah, or how you can become part of our Beth Hillel family, please visit our website at www.bethhillel.org. That's BETHHALLEL.org. Or call 770-641-3000. If you are in the Metro Atlanta area, please visit us for an Arab Shabbat service, Friday nights at 8 o'clock, or Shabbat services, Saturday mornings at 11. God bless and shalom.